I mix what I like.
This Second Childhood production is for the Killer Bees podcast and I mix what I like.org.
I mix what I like.
So joining the show is Juliana Jules Smith, who is a cultural worker, educator, writer, and organizer, and creator of Hafrocentric, a groundbreaking and thought-provoking comic book. She can be found online at Hafrocentric.com. Jules, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks so much for having me on, Jared.
Tell us about Hafrocentric and, of course, then Naima and her ally T-shirt.
I'm glad you caught that. So Hafrocentric is, or it follows four students that go to a fictitious university called Ronald Reagan University. And we follow them as they navigate through the changes that are happening at their school and also the changes that are happening in their neighborhood. In this last volume, we're particularly concerned with the changes that are going on in their neighborhood. We follow these characters and we follow the main character perhaps a little bit more. Her name is Naima Pepper, and she does wear a shirt that says ally on it, and of course it has the abolitionist on it, John Brown. So some folks may catch that, a lot of folks may not.
Well, and as I read in somewhere on your website, you made that point in particular to if I interpreted it correctly, to sort of make this point that if there are going to be interracial allied unified work of some kind, it would have to be on the basis of what Malcolm X's standard for white alliance or allegiance would be, which I thought, you know, so I thought that was interesting, and it was I thought very well done. So
yeah, again, I'm not sure if a lot of people caught that, but yes, and that,
well, that's why they should read into your website. I mean, they should go ahead and follow up and do the research.
Yes, they should, exactly.
So tell us a little bit, you know, you mentioned a little bit in your bio, but tell us a little bit about why. Well, first of all, let's you know, tell us about the name Hafrocentric, and then why you chose comic books as a medium to convey your message.
Yeah, so Hafrocentric is obviously a word that I made up, but it's basically for two reasons. One is the tagline is because it's hard being Afrocentric in a Eurocentric world, hence the half in Hafrocentric. And then also the two main characters are mixed black and white, and a lot of it, you know, goes back to me thinking about my own kind of background being mixed, having a white mother and a black father. And this relationship between my brother and I and, you know, the neighborhood that we grew up in. So I'm playing off of that a lot. But the other thing is, you know, why a comic book? I've been teaching in community colleges for a number of years, and I was giving my students a lot of different essays, you know, as the professor of ethnic studies and African-American studies, I would give my students, you know, Fanon and everyone. And what I realized is, like, the few essays that I was giving them, they weren't really reading, but when I would give them comic books, they would. So I had to start thinking about mediums that would reach a broader audience. And an audience that was busy and working and going to school. So I originally intended Hafrocentric to be a curriculum. That was the original intention. And then it turned into something completely different. But I was using the Real Cost of Prisons comic book. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Can you remind me who put that out? I'm seeing it in my head, too.
Well, it's co-created, so a number of folks put it out. But I know Ruthie... It's either Ruthie Gilmore or Craig Gilmore had a big hand in it, organizing it. Ruthie Gilmore is the radical Marxist geographer and prison abolitionist.
Right. Were they? But I'm also thinking that I got it from Project South or maybe through their work or something like that. Anyway, I'm not sure if they were directly affiliated, or if that was intentional, if that organization was just using this word. But anyway, in some, or if I'm thinking of something else even, but it, one way or another, I am familiar with what you're talking about. Anyway, I'm sorry. Go
ahead. Yeah, no, that's okay. And it went over really well in my classroom. I was teaching a little bit about the prison industrial complex. And what I found is that students were taking that comic book and actually giving it to their family members. So again, I thought, you know, the comic book is a really powerful medium, and even though I didn't end up creating a curriculum or something that looks similar to Real Cost of Prisons, that was definitely my inspiration to start thinking about using comic books as a way to talk about, you know, all the things that are going on in the world, and doing it in a humorous way. So.
Yeah, I mean, and you tackle some serious issues and bring some serious politics into this work, which I found interesting and fascinating and obviously necessary. I mean, we talked a little bit about Naima, the protagonist's T-shirt, and some of the politics associated with that. But you make a number of references to some of the more notable radical figures in human rights struggle history. Could you talk a little bit about the message of Naima and your message that comes out in the comics? What are the kind of politics you're looking to pass along or to have people engage?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult, I feel like, because we live in a time where radical politics are even more radical because they're less visible. So one of the things that I try to do, and I do this in Volume 1, 2, and 3, I literally bring ancestors back, and that's very purposeful. So in Volume 1, I bring, you know, Du Bois comes back from the dead, and then in Volume 2, George Jackson comes back from the dead. I think in Volume 3, I give mention to the MOVE organization. Mm-hmm. So, but again, it's not so much, I'm not throwing their politics completely in there, but I am mentioning them. And they come back in various ways. So even giving kind of a nod to them is very purposeful, right? And you know, not exactly hitting folks over the head, but mentioning these folks.
Well, I mean, what I liked about it is that, you know, to that point about not hitting people over the head, which I admittedly is my own preference, but, you know, also admittedly, not, you know, it doesn't always work. I mean, but what I think is cool about what you've done is that you made these people seem cool just by having them, or their politics seem acceptable or okay just by having them as part of the regular mix of the conversation. So in this latest issue, Naima is tackling the issue of gentrification, but in the conversations that she's having and trying to develop a rally, at least if I interpret it right, you're not only, you know, making certain radical politics seem cool and certain figures that you mention, be it Fanon or Malcolm or whoever, but you even, you know, allow for there to be some, I guess, I don't know, some self-deprecating humor regarding Naima's role and getting on, literally putting her on her soapbox. And I mean, you have a little bit of fun with what I found at least to be a fun read with some very serious politics. And again, just kind of infusing these people's ideas in there or their names in such a way that allows for the reader to just, I think at least say, you know, well, I mean, this must be kind of acceptable if she's got it on a T-shirt or if there's a sign on the wall or if these are the kind of, these are the names that come up in conversation. So I thought that was pretty cool. And obviously that was intentional and it seems to work quite well.
Yeah, no, definitely. It's definitely intentional to bring radical politics in. I'm not unapologetic about that at all. And like I said, because we live in a moment where radical politics are not necessarily mainstream, it's, you know, just trying to give folks, just like handing them something, you know. And the other thing, too, is Naima functions as this radical figure in conversation with different, in a way, different political archetypes, right? So I'm not sure if you maybe caught this, but some of the characters, you know, they hold different kind of political views.
Right.
And that's also part of the intention of the book. I don't want it to be so obvious that it's, you know, it's hard to read. And I think, you know, I think I did a pretty good job of, you know, you know, you know these people, right? You know these politics, right? And they come up in dialogue, right? And that's really what I was trying to show, more so than like they're sitting in a living room talking about the best method to do this and this and that. It's really like, what are the conversations that folks have, you know, on the streets, right? And what's the pushback, you know?
No, absolutely. And again, as I said, I think it works quite well. You know, and I'll have to go back into the archives and catch the earlier volumes that I did miss, unfortunately. But you mentioned George Jackson, so that's my man. So I'm gonna definitely go back and check that one out. And obviously, we encourage our listeners to do the same. One thing that you did mention it, and that is obviously of interest to me. My own personal background being quite similar and engaging these politics from that background. I'm interested in the way that being mixed race as we are has played a role in your development. And I was in particularly interested in the way, at least to me, it reads in a way that I quite like, that this idea that kind of something that I keep borrowing from Dream Hampton, who made the point to me once upon a time about that her overt black radical politics is no less a disavowal of her white mother than her feminist politics is a disavowal of her black father. But you know, this way that you are taking positions that are obviously relevant to the black and brown and broader so-called people of color communities, and not sort of saying, well, because I have a white mother, that must mean that I must also put my politics in sort of some middle stream centrist position, undecided position as well. So I appreciated that. And I immediately gravitated to the name Afrocentric and to this protagonist and to the way you deliver these characters. But I wanted to, also ask, if my interpretation is correct. And what you think maybe about this moment with Barack Obama, with this so-called post-racial drive, and the politics of multiracial identity, if you had, wanted to say a few words about any of that.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, and I will give you volume one, because I sort of tackled that in volume one, this idea of mixed race politics. And I listened to the show where you had Jared on. Jared Sexton, and
right.
I read a lot of Jared, and I read a lot of Frank. So you already know where I'm going.
Okay,
with
very good. That's right. That's what's and that's Frank Wilderson. And people should check the archives at mixwhatilike.org for our discussions with him as well. Absolutely. Yeah, but please go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I've been reading them for a couple of years now, and I was also sort of mentored by Dylan Rodriguez, who mm-hmm. went to school with Jared Sexton. So I'm in that line of thought. So, and you'll see it, when you read volume one. But I guess simply put, I would say that the thing around mixed race politics, and again, I put in different perspectives in the comic because I just want to show different perspectives. But through Naima, what she's saying is basically your problem is not that you're mixed or that you have a white parent. Your problem is that you're black. You know? And that's if succinctly put, right? It's not simply that you have a white parent and that's what's making your life so hard or complicated.
It's the fact that you don't have really, two white parents.
Right, exactly. Exactly. So, I mean, that's pretty much as succinct as I can get, and everyone should go read Jared Sexton and Frank Wilderson.
No doubt. In fact, I need to reread these cats because they're deep as hell and brilliant. Well said. Is very well said. Well, listen, Juliana Jules Smith, thank you very much for joining me for these brief few moments to talk about your work. She, again, can be found at halfrocentric.com. Please, everybody, go check out this work, this art. Oh, by the way, I'm sorry, I forgot. I got to double back here very quickly. Tell us about the artists that you work with. This is obviously not a solo project. Putting out a comic book of this quality is more complicated than I think a lot of people might realize. Tell us about your colleagues and comrades in this effort.
Yeah, thank you so much for asking that, actually. So I work with an illustrator. His name is Ron Nelson. Really, really phenomenal. He's just a phenomenal illustrator. But also, you know, it's hard to explain the process of creating a comic book, because essentially what Ron's doing is he's putting words into visuals. And that is really, really difficult. And it's something that, you know, obviously if it wasn't for Ron, this would not look the same. And he just really does a phenomenal job. And even just the paneling and the way that the story flows, I really have to give him, you know, all the credit for the flow of the story. He really makes it happen. And for folks that don't know, I think part of the reason maybe why a lot of folks don't do comic books versus like making a mixtape or making an album is because it really takes a long time. So volume 3 has taken over a year to produce. So if you want immediate gratification, this is not the route to go. But you know, if you want to, you know, if you want to create solid work and if you want it to live in a different way, like, it's a beautiful medium. But again, I really have to give thanks to Ron, because he's quite the professional and perfectionist. And I've said it before that what he does with the character's hair and like the real kind of specifics around the character's aesthetic is hugely important to making Afrocentric look and feel the way that it does. So yeah, very much indebted to the work that Ron's done. And actually, can I say one more thing?
No, absolutely, please.
So, Jared, the version that I sent you, it wasn't the full version. There's still, I actually did create a mixtape to go along with the comic book. Yeah, so actually, I'm going to send you the other version. But so inside, as you're reading the book, there is a QR code, like a scan code, and if you're reading it, you can scan it with your phone, and it takes you to an online mixtape. And again, using the comic book as a medium, I wanted to kind of push the limits of how we read comic books and how we read in general, because we're living in an age where, you know, folks are like, you know, their attention spans are shorter. So halfway through, we have this option to like listen to the rest of the block party, right?
Wow. So, right. Okay. Wow. Okay. Yeah. That's okay. This is gonna be. I can't wait. That's dope. That's really,
yeah. So
really dope.
Definitely have folks check that out.
No. Again, Juliana Jewel Smith, thank you very much. Afrocentric.com. The comic book is Afrocentric. People need to get caught up. As do I. And as you just heard. Still learning about all that comes with this great project. So thank you very much. And yes, I do know a little bit about, you know, my comrade Todd Burrows and I have had a comic book or a graphic novel project that we can't get moved for a number of years now. So I have a little bit of an understanding of how difficult it is and getting the right artist to work with and you know, finishing it and all that kind of stuff. So we really appreciate that that you've done this. And thank you for joining us and continued good work. Again, that's Afrocentric, Afrocentric.com. And Jules, thank you again for joining me at Mix What I Like.
Thanks so much.
I mix what I like. This Second Childhood production is for the Killer Bees Podcast and I mix what I like.org. I mix what I like.